If diet is incorrect, medicine is of no use. If diet is correct, medicine is of no need.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But if you think of, if you dive into sort of like where the funding for these medical schools is coming from, it's all coming from pharmaceutical companies.
Oh, absolutely.
So they have a vested interest in teaching these people what to prescribe, when to prescribe it, how to prescribe it, and not how to actually care for the human body. So medical doctors are being indoctrinated into the pharmaceutical industry, basically.
Welcome everyone to another amazing episode of the Human Experience Podcast. This is your host, Elvin Hassa. And today my guest is Jessica from United States, Colorado. Before I introduce her, I actually would like to bring her on. She's amazing at what she does. She spent a lot of years helping humanity around the globe, running retreats. And obviously during COVID, she moved a lot of her business online. So I'm going to invite Jessica to introduce herself in her own words, and then we can dive deeper in all her amazing work. So welcome, Jessica.
Thank you, Elvin. It's a delight to be here. I guess my self-introduction, I'm a massage therapist for over a decade in the industry, which is sort of my professional introduction into the health and wellness field, that has then served as a gateway to learn about so many other aspects of health and wellness, not just from the physical perspective, but emotional, mental, and spiritual, and how they all interrelate and fit together. So I'm currently running a small private practice here in Boulder, Colorado, working with clients on everything from detoxing from mold, recovering from surgery, dealing with anxiety, getting rid of migraines. And then I also am the owner and CEO of Integral Travel, which is the company that runs the retreats that you mentioned. And those retreats they're wellness retreats. And so they're focused on teaching people tools to unlock the natural healing capacity of their bodies. And these tools are kind of structured in a natural flow, you know, throughout the days of the retreat, and are designed for our participants to be able to incorporate them back into their daily lives once they get back home.
Wonderful. Now, I'd like to ask you, if we can go back, what inspired you to, obviously, what I'm hearing is you have multiple businesses, especially the retreat business. You are CEO and founder of that business. You know, there's many moving parts. You know, you've been doing it for many years prior to COVID. And so what inspired you to go into that business and to be where you are today?
Well, it's sort of the culmination of a lot of different interests that I had even prior to going into massage school, that has sort of been growing into, you know, a vision and dream for my life. But before I went to massage school, I was sort of considering doing outdoor education with kids. And so before I spent, you know, $100,000 on going to grad school to get a master's in that field, I decided to get a summer job to sort of explore what it would actually be like. So I got a summer job with a company based out of California and did a tour in the summer of 07 with fifth and sixth graders, did three tours with different groups of fifth and sixth graders, and had an amazing time. It was so fun. So the next summer, I went back to the same company, but jumped on their international team and was sent to Ecuador for a community service trip with a group of 15-year-olds. And I don't know if you've ever spent any time around 15-year-olds, but they can be brats, to put it politely. And it was sort of a traumatizing experience for me, actually. I ended up being sort of like the bad cop between myself and my co-leader. I was like, you know, the enforcer of the schedule and the rules, and the kids just ended up hating me. And I didn't really have much of an affinity for them either. It was just sort of like, okay. So that spurred me to go in a different direction. So when I got back from that summer, that's when I decided to go to massage school. I've always been an athlete growing up, and so familiar with, you know, working out and taking care of the body from a physical perspective. In college, I had become a vegetarian, and so started learning more about the nutritional aspect of taking care of the human body. And the massage seemed like a great way to be able to help people. And turns out I had a natural touch. Like the first person I ever gave a practice massage to, who's still one of my dear friends to this day, her comment was, "Are you sure this is the first time you've done this?" So that was really cool. And so, after massage school, I jumped back into the classroom and stayed involved as a TA and a teacher because I did have this affinity for teaching. It turns out teaching adults is very different than teaching kids. The adults actually want to be there. So they're a lot more engaged, and there's a lot more just presence in the classroom. And once I started teaching, I got certified to teach yoga like a year after I finished massage school. And so just started adding all of these different tools to my toolkit. And this was sort of about 10 years ago, was sort of the advent of like traveling and teaching yoga, like running retreats, or as far as I was concerned, it was my first introduction. And I was like, yeah, I want to do that, you know? And then, you know, continued through the 20 teens, more teaching experience under my belt. And then ultimately a colleague in the Boulder area who was running, she was actually running a Thai massage retreat business. So teaching people how to do Thai massage in these international destinations. She had been running that business since 2002. And my specialty in the bodywork field is shiatsu. So shiatsu and Thai massage are very similar. They're both performed on the ground, the recipient keeps their clothes on, there's lots of movement and stretching and twisting. And from the outside, they look very similar. So sort of twin pillars in the bodywork world, if you will. And she was going in a different direction in her life. She had met her husband, had gotten pregnant with twins, and was just not in a place to continue traveling internationally for extended periods of time. So she asked me if I wanted to buy her business. So I'm not actually the founder of Integral Travel. This woman, Sunny Vanderstar, was the original founder, but I purchased the business from her with the understanding that I was going to keep the Thai massage training and add on shiatsu because that was my passion and specialty. And so I did. We bought the business. I had a business partner at the time, and we ran our first retreat to Thailand, teaching Thai massage. It was a 5-week trip. So we had a small cluster of people that were able to get away for that period of time. And that experience was very eye-opening, to say the least. It was kind of a fiasco, to be honest. Like a lot of things went wrong on the trip, you don't know what you don't know. So there's probably some other things that could go wrong in international travel with a group of people. But I'm of the mindset that like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. We had a participant need to go to the hospital. We had a participant leave the group before the retreat was actually over. We had infighting among the participants. It was just super, super challenging. So in the aftermath, we made it through though. And by the end, everyone was happy. Everyone was relieved. The Thai massage teachers also just did not really give their all to the students. And so it was just, like I said, super eye-opening. And in the aftermath of that, my business partner decided to go in a different direction, which was good for me. And I decided to take the business in a different direction. I felt like teaching people this very niche skill of, Thai massage or shiatsu appealed to a very small subset of the population. And I want to be able to help as many people as possible. And I recognize that the title of massage therapist has been very limiting for me in terms of the knowledge that I do have and what I can offer to people. Because people based on labels sort of put you in this box of like, okay, well, here's your expertise and anything outside of that, like, I'm not going to listen to you, or I'm just going to kind of stop listening or tune out or whatever. So I'd been wanting to move into a more kind of like coaching role to offer advice about nutrition and advice about just downshifting your body out of the stress state into rest and digest to really optimize, again, that natural healing capacity of your body. So I decided to change the model to doing wellness retreats, because recognizing that there's a big glut in our education system for these basic concepts of how to take care of these bodies and spirits that we spend our whole lives with, that it's, you know, it's very skimming the surface in terms of health class in, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school. So, that's what brought us to where we are today with Integral Travel, running wellness retreats and again, like teaching people how to care for these vessels that our spirits are in throughout this lifetime.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. And I understand also that, you know, the medical science, like medical practitioners, they, during their studies to obtain a degree, they, especially in the United States, they only spent 12 hours studying about nutrition, right? So it's very peculiar that somebody who, you know, is labeled as a health practitioner doesn't know anything about nutrition, right? And well, as you say, the school and middle school, but then, you know, even if you go for the type of education of, you know, obtaining a medical degree, they spend 12 hours. I think in the UK it's like 40 hours, but still it's very minimal in terms right. of what you can learn about, you know, as they say, use let thy food be your medicine, you know,
exactly, exactly. Or that that Ayurvedic proverb, if diet is correct, medicine, if diet is incorrect, medicine is of no use. If diet is correct, medicine is of no need.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
But if you think of, if you dive into sort of like where the funding for these medical schools is coming from, it's all coming from pharmaceutical companies.
Oh, absolutely.
So they have a vested interest in teaching these people what to prescribe, when to prescribe it, how to prescribe it, and not how to actually care for the human body. So medical doctors are being indoctrinated into the pharmaceutical industry, basically.
Yeah, no, listen, that's another episode recording.
Yeah,
another exactly. 20 hours. I speak about that. People can find out exactly what she was, what Jessica was mentioning in my videos on Instagram. I do these health tips. But yeah, what's funny, my mother lives in Australia and I spoke to her this morning earlier, UK time, and it was evening in Australia, and she was unwell and she went to see a doctor. And she said, you know, I went to see a doctor. He didn't even look at me, just asked me some questions and then was looking at on the internet and giving me some advice. He said, she goes, I can do that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's like, exactly. It's like, well, what? And I said, well, mum, you're lucky, because most people, they actually don't get seen by a doctor. They get seen by a nurse, and the doctor is reading a chart and then he's right. giving you opinion. So, I mean, I don't know. It's like, yeah, give them this, give them 20 milligrams of this and 10 milligrams of that, and yes, and send them home. And you know, I personally, look, my audience knows about me. I've spent 30 years studying neuroscience, epigenetics, neuroendocrinology, psychoimmunology, epigenetics, quantum wow. physics, and I'm a scientist, as well as I've got many degrees and certifications. But ultimately, I'm a infinite, everlasting spiritual being having a temporary human experience. So what I personally do in my life every single day is I work on the four pillars. I work on my spirituality. I work on my emotional resilience, emotional intelligence, on my mm-hmm. heart, on my emotions. I work on my physical body. Mm-hmm. And I work on my mindset, on my mind, on my, you know, thoughts and beliefs, right? And that's what I do. And of course, beautiful. You know, when it comes to the health of a human body, I have been sort of flexible vegetarian for about 15 years. And for 6 years, I've been vegan, but very strict vegan, only eating fruit and vegetables and sort of whole food, not processed. I don't do any of the sort of like no chicken, no beef burgers, and these kind of like tempeh burgers and stuff.
Right.
I just eat like literally fruit and veg. That's it, you know?
Wow.
And you know, I went extreme, actually, because I know you're health sort of, you are actually a true health practitioner, not these people. These people, I call them medical practitioners because, you know, the premise that a medical doctor can heal you, it's a belief that, you know, we drive a vehicle, we drive a car. So we say, okay, when the computer shows something is at fault, we take the car to the mechanic so the mechanic can do some repairs, right?
Exactly.
But this is the opinion of human beings that the doctors are like mechanics, you know?
Right.
And the mechanics or so-called doctors, they actually have no skill set to repair, to heal you.
Right.
They
right.
can just say, oh, I think, I guess, in my opinion, try this. This might work. Come and see me after 3 months. And if these pills have not worked, then I'm going to prescribe some other ones. But what I personally do and my family, we've learned that the body actually, it's just perfect, has the capacity to heal itself, has the capacity yes. to get rid of the toxins. And this is what the process of detoxifying your body is when you get a cold or flu. This is when you know, you have a high level of toxicity, which you ingested through food and cosmetics. This is what a lot of people, they don't know. Cosmetics are even worse than the food you eat because mm-hmm. most of them are full of chemicals and toxins, which are highly carcinogenic, affect mm-hmm. your endocrine system, affect your fertility, affect mm-hmm. your thyroid. And this is actually all public knowledge. You can actually look at it, look at the ingredients, mm-hmm. do some research. And actually, there is an app called Yuka, Y-U-K-A. It's an independent app, which you can download on any app store, Android and iOS. And when you are at the supermarket, at your grocery store, you scan the barcode and it reads it automatically. And it tells
wow.
you, it grades it poor, good, and excellent. So excellent is closest possible to 100. And if it's poor, it tells you why it's poor, what are the ingredients, and you can click through to independent website of the government.
Wow.
It tells you what are those E numbers, what are those pesticides and chemicals, and it tells you the research behind it, why
wow.
you should not. And it says avoid for human consumption. But organizations like FDA and organizations equivalent in Europe and UK and around the world have approved these chemicals to be in the food products, to be in the cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very passionate about the true health. And that's why
Absolutely.
I appreciate Jessica, the true health professional, to come here to share her wisdom to help humanity. So now let's dive into your expertise, because this is true expert. So helping people with anxiety, using Qigong, using different energy healing techniques and other skill sets that you've acquired over the decades. Can mm-hmm. we dive a little bit more into that? I know you've helped loads of people with anxiety. And how do you do that? And also, is there some advice you can give to our viewers, to our listeners?
Yes, absolutely. So anxiety was something that I think was always sort of simmering under the surface for me growing up. As a child, I was very free. I was like a free spirit, just kind of unconcerned with, or not even unconcerned, but totally unaware of like that people had judgments about, you know, the way that I was showing up and joyful and free as a child. But I was always a little bit chubby and not really one of the cool kids. You know, I was an athlete, but I was also in band and I was also, you know, a straight A student. And at some point I became aware of like, oh, people are judging, you know, and it just sort of like, that combined with a couple of sort of bipolar relationships I had, the two closest relationships actually of my childhood growing up, which were my brother and my best friend. We'd have a great time when we were by ourselves. Like we would just be best friends and having so much fun. And then as soon as another person would join the mix, I would all of a sudden become the butt of jokes. They would reveal my, you know, secrets and things that I had told them in confidence. And it just, it was always so hurtful. And I was always so shocked, even though this happened again and again and again. It's one of those things like, oh, you think you learned the pattern, you know, but I wasn't thinking in those terms as a young child. And so it just sort of gave me this subconscious programming that either this is what love is, that it hurts, and that these people are going to betray you, or that I wasn't lovable. So either way you slice it, it's just super heartbreaking for a child to get that kind of messaging over and over. So I sort of internalized that. And when I became aware of like these judgments of other people, it was also sort of my late teen years. And I started experimenting with drugs and alcohol and started smoking cannabis. And that for me became a literal smoke shield. Like I could be high, but be in the company of other people. And so I'd get my social needs met, but there was this veil between my emotional and mental presence with the situation. So it was a way for me to, again, get my social needs met, but not have to be, not show up vulnerably emotionally and mentally. And so I slid into an addiction with cannabis that came to the point of being high all day, every day, from like the moment I wake up, it was the first thing that I would do, to it was the last thing that I would do before I went to bed, and then just consistently throughout the day to maintain that state. And that that level of addiction for me lasted about 7 years throughout my 20s. And I don't really remember a lot of that time period of my life. But I came to realize that there was a problem when I tried to sort of cut back, and I was like, I don't need to be, you know, smoking this much. Like, how can, like, and I would try to not smoke, but then before I knew it, it was just this compulsion. Like, I didn't know how to be sober because I wasn't comfortable even with myself. I didn't love myself because of this, you know, these childhood experiences that I had had. So it was a years long process of me even becoming aware that it was an addiction, first and foremost. Second, starting to grapple with bringing it under control, which for me, was intricately involved with, I had to understand the why. Why am I doing this? What am I compensating for? Instead of just, like you kind of alluded to, Western medicine just being allopathic and like treating the symptom, these Western doctors of like, oh, I'm going to give you a pill to treat the symptom and don't worry about the underlying cause. It was like the addiction for me was a symptom of something deeper. And so it wasn't just about treating the addiction. It was about getting to understand the root cause of why I was compulsively getting high. And it took years of introspection through yoga and meditation and Qigong to understand that it did stem from these childhood relationships that I had, that I didn't love myself, didn't even know how to let myself be loved, that I had friends at this time of my life that didn't exhibit any of the behaviors that I had been conditioned to expect from close friends during my childhood. And so there was a reconciliation between, okay, my underlying trauma set me up to have these expectations for my close friends that they were going to hurt me and betray me. And yet here was this real world example of this group of friends that I had that were absolutely so loving and joyful and fully accepting of me, even more than I was accepting of myself at the time, you know? And so it, it's making me emotional just recalling this, but, so that was a huge part of my healing process also, was really looking at, okay, the subconscious programming versus the reality of the situation around me. And so that's how I ultimately kind of got myself out of that addictive relationship with that plant. But meanwhile, yeah. So I, you know, my tips for people and in terms of anyone who's dealing with anxiety and an addiction are to really dive into the why. Like, what are you compensating for? What was the underlying root cause that led to this addiction. And, you know, finding the answers to those questions is not easy, nor is it like an overnight kind of thing. And even when you do realize it, the process of sort of changing your relationship with, you know, the addicted substance is also can be long. So I just say, be gentle with yourself. It was a years long process for me of getting out of that addiction. And there was progress, and then there was backslides, and there was progress, and there was backslides. And, you know, so the tools that I used again were yoga, meditation, and Qigong. And then in addition, just having amazing and supportive family and friends. But, you know, therapy is a useful tool for people. And there are lots of different therapies that actually now link, you know, the emotional and mental health to the body and what's going on in the body, which I will say that was a big part of my, my tool set also. It was like during this time period, I was also going to massage school and learning about Chinese medicine through the practice of shiatsu. And Chinese medicine for me was this amazing window through which I could look at the occurrences of my life and be able to interpret them in a way that linked what was going on in my body physically with what was going on psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, because the five elements and Chinese medicine have this this way of looking at the human being as an entire organism, that it's not you, like you said, a machine, right? The body is not a machine where you come in and you replace one part and it has nothing to do with the other parts. Chinese medicine looks at the human body like a garden. And so, you know, one area of the garden that's suffering affects all of the other systems and goings on in the garden. And so it's about cultivating the soil in of the garden so that, you know, the weeds don't grow in the first place, the bacteria doesn't grow in the first place, and everything in the garden can flourish in harmony all at once. And so that's where, you know, that's like the root of my healing practice, is just like you said, that the body is a self-healing organism. It has all of the intelligence that it needs, but sometimes it needs a little nudge from the outside, you know, here or there, like drawing in the most extreme energetic things happening on the one end, and then the things that are really don't have enough energy on the other end, and kind of bringing them closer to center. So yeah, Chinese medicine really helped me bring everything into focus and see how it all fit together. And that it wasn't just, oh, these physical symptoms and then this other emotional thing over here. It's like, no, it's all interrelated. And then the practice of Qigong then gave me a tool to manipulate my own energy from the inside out in order to address, you know, the energetic disharmonies that were happening in the body, get the energy moving through all of the meridians in the body in a smooth way. And it's an ongoing process, right? It's not like a stagnant system where, okay, I made it, you know, and now I get to stop doing my practice. It's a daily thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Like, I always get asked the question, so Eldin, why do you meditate every day? And I say, because if I can spend some time, if I can carve up some time early in the morning, that I get over myself, I get over my ego, then the rest of the day is easy. The rest of the day I'm serving. And actually that gives me the foundation to be the best version of myself. So I can serve, whether it's, you know, you show up in your business relationships, in your intimate relationships with your partner, with your children, with your family, with, you know, friends and, you know, colleagues, associates. And this is very important to actually acknowledge that, you know, people put so many, like humans, if you study various different kind of sciences, even those, they put them in sort of compartments, right? And right. It's like one should not touch the other. If you ask the biologist a question about, I don't know, whatever, and they will only give you a specific answer. But then if you try to go outside the box and, no, I don't know anything about the physics, but the nature, the mother nature, there is no boxes. Everything is interlinked. Everything is right. Interconnected, as well right. As in human body, in the physical body, as well as in the, you know, and the sciences like epigenetics, quantum physics, or quantum field theory the last few decades, which is irrefutable evidence, like I would say number one most important science that has debunked many myths is quantum physics. And what it says is that science and spirituality, same thing.
It's bridging the gap between science and spirituality.
Absolutely. And you know, I've met Dr. Bruce Lipton, I've met Dr. Joe Dispenza, I've met scientists like Greg Braden, and these are like, they call them three amigos because they've done many talks around the world as the three on stage. And it's incredible. Like Bruce Lipton, he said, for example, he said, I did not have to spend decades of devotion, of prayer or spiritual sort of devotion to realize that I am a spiritual being or to learn. He said, I learned that in laboratory. I went there. Right. And when I looked at the cells, and he said, at the end of all the nerve cells, there are these proteins like antenna, right? Mm-hmm. But he realized that there is no self within the cells. The self is outside of the cells. And he said, well, if there is no self within the cells, where is the broadcast? The broadcast is out there. And then he was, you know, saying that basically, you know, in the past when they used the equipment like EEG, they mm-hmm. had to plug you into different equipment and it was touching your head, touching your body. But then when they discovered the other equipment, MEG, magnetoaccelerograph, then the probes are outside. They're not touching your. So they said, oh, so the thoughts are not in the head. They are on the outside. They are the broadcast. So if the broadcast is on the outside and, you know, they don't have the equipment big enough to measure how far the broadcast goes and where it is, but now they believe it's all around us. And this is why you are in the United States, 5,000-6,000 miles away. It feels like we are in the same room because it's all interlinked. There is this invisible web of energy which interlinks everything and everyone. And actually the same energy which resides within us is all around us. So everything we say, we do, we think, we feel, we behave, it impacts every single atom in your life and all around you. Exactly. And this is why it's so powerful not to put things into different compartments, but to understand them as the one very intelligent, coherent system which operates to heal you, to protect you, to guide you. And, you know, it's all within you. As Jessica said, you know, you have to do some introspection, maybe do some journaling. Definitely very powerful, active practice of gratitude. Mm-hmm. It's huge. I mean, you know, that alone, because, you know, we are not taught to be proud of ourselves. We are not taught to be our own cheerleaders. We are taught to look for faults, to criticize, you know? Mm-hmm. Somehow, you know, if you are not performing, doing at the level of perfection in somebody's eyes, you know, straight A level, somehow you are not good enough. And this is from childhood, indoctrinated, embossed in people's brains all around the world. As a human being, we all been through these experiences. And that's why when we become adults, that inner child healing, it's required away from the substances, away from alcohol, away from drugs, away from emotional eating. And this emotional baggage, it's what's actually standing in the way between our best version of ourselves and, you know, to live that happy life where, as you say, all the meridians are aligned, there is a free flow, and we just like have this sense of health and vitality and joy and happiness oozing from within us.
Right. There's so much in what you said that I could use as a tangent to continue, but The interrelatedness, what you were saying about Dr. Bruce Lipton's research and the cells having these antennae and then communicating with the environment around them, it's the micro and the macro, right? Like, so are we as human beings then getting information from the environment around us, and then that is kind of shaping who we are. And I'm glad you brought up quantum physics also, because I have been an avid practitioner of Qigong for over a decade. I've been teaching Qigong for almost a decade, and I have a lot of trouble finding people that are interested in learning this practice. They hear my story, they understand the benefits, but it's a challenging practice because it's very esoteric. It's very foreign to the Western mind. And B, it's not just something that you can kind of like bang out and do and check off the list, right? It's not like working out like, okay, I did my 10 sit-ups or I did my 100 push-ups or whatever. But Qigong is a challenging practice because it requires you to slow down and let your mind kind of calm down and become still. And that is the biggest challenge, I think, for people with meditation, that like, oh, I can't meditate because I don't know how to calm my mind down. Well, Qigong is sort of this intermediary step because it's a moving meditation. So for those of you listeners who don't know what Qigong is, you're probably familiar with Tai Chi. So Tai Chi is the most well-known style of Qigong. And just like there are many styles of yoga, there are many, many styles of Qigong, of which Tai Chi is one. It's a martial form of Qigong. So meant to be used in combat, where you harness the energy from the universe, and then you're able to like throw someone across the room or something. But there are also spiritual styles of Qigong and medical styles of Qigong, and they all overlap in terms of their benefits. But so because it's movement-based meditation, it gives your mind something to focus on, and therefore it's training the focus of the mind as well as the stilling of the mind. And if you are one of the people who think that you don't know how to calm your mind or still your mind, then go to my website, integraltravel.com, go to the classes tab, and there is a suite of guided meditations that are free on there. And choose the one that says relaxation. You will learn how to calm your mind. I can help bring you into a state of calm mind. I've had students before be like, I've never experienced that before. So it's amazing. But so I have this hurdle of getting people interested in Qigong because it's such an esoteric practice, but really the reality of it is it's all physics based. Physics, quantum physics tells us that matter is energy. So my shirt is vibrating at a different frequency than are my jeans, than is my desk, than is the computer. And that's what gives us this sense of the solid world around us. But through this vibration that's happening at this subatomic level, there are then things being kind of emitted from that. And that's where the biomagnetic fields that you were talking about come into play with the MER or MEG technology it's being studied by a number of different institutions around the world. But the one that specifically comes to mind for me is the HeartMath Institute in California. And they're studying the biomagnetic frequency of the heart. And they're finding that it emanates out from the body 10 times farther than the biomagnetic frequency of the brain. So that really the heart is the seat of intelligence in the human body, that we can actually sense stuff going on around us. And in our modern society, there's so much going on. We live in such a fast-paced world, and we're now exposed to more people in a day than our grandparents were or great-grandparents were in their whole lifetimes. You know, when they had very small communities that they lived in, nobody really moved far away. And now we have the option to move anywhere in the world. We have the internet. We're exposed to so much. And so the heart is having trouble dealing with it, right? So people's hearts are kind of like drawing in and shrinking and hardening. And that's how we sort of protect ourselves from other people's energy and from all the horrific things that are really happening in the globe. But the practice Qigong can, if you are practicing certain styles, help you to open your heart, soften your heart, heal your heart. Because when you do that on an individual basis, that then, as you said, is emanating out into the world. It's affecting the atoms and the hearts of everyone that you come into contact with. And that has been a very personal experience for me through the practice of Shengzhen Gong in particular, which is the Qigong of unconditional love. And I was exposed, or that came into my life actually on a day that I had a nervous breakdown in 2012. So I had graduated from massage school. I had started teaching. I continued my shiatsu studies, and I jumped on the board of directors of the shiatsu program that I was studying for, to build a larger program. So instead of just doing these kind of like same 30-hour workshops over and over, it was like, how do we get to the next step? And they were like, well, we need help. And I said, okay, well, I can help. So we built a 125-hour program. We ran that program. So I'm like, you know, helping build the program and studying at the same time, doing my massage practice, teaching. We built another 125-hour program, and we're going through that. Meanwhile, that sort of team had also opened a wellness center, of which I was the director of business development. And I was working like 90 hours a week to get this thing off the ground, in addition to doing my, you know, advanced studies in shiatsu and running that program and doing massage. And I had totally lost track of all of my self-care. I was, you know, if 90 hours a week, if you do the math, it's like working till 1 a.m. and then getting up at 6 a.m. and doing it all over again. And so because there's such this, you know, physical to-do list, it's like, let's get all these things checked off the list as fast as possible. Again, the actual like slowing down to do a practice, just, it went out the door. So I was actually subsisting on coffee to keep me awake from being my underrested state. I had actually digressed to smoking cigarettes to just have an excuse to go outside and be away from the computer for 5 or 10 minutes. And then, you know, drinking beer in the evenings to have some sense of like relaxation to help ease the stress that I was feeling. And it ultimately, it led to a nervous breakdown. It was not sustainable for me. I had gotten to the point where someone just said my name and it felt like glass was shattering inside my body. Like, I was so fragile. I didn't have anything left to give. And I was just doing my best to keep up. And then this man walked into the wellness center, and he said, the day of my breakdown, which, you know, I just couldn't stop crying for hours. And I finally pulled myself back together. I didn't have to go to the hospital or get on medication. But I pulled myself together. I was still there at work. And this man walked in. He said, I'm here to talk to someone about teaching Qigong classes. And I had experience with a handful of styles of Qigong by that point, and was really enamored with, you know, feeling energy in the palms of my hands. And I was like, well, I'm the person you need to talk to, and I have experience with that. So why don't we go into the classroom and you can show me what you got, basically. And so the style that he was teaching was called Shengzhen Gong, and I immediately felt its power. I moved from being able to feel qi in the palms of my hands into feeling it in my entire body. And I was hooked. I started practicing his forms every single day. Within a month, I was at a 5-day meditation retreat with the founder of Shengzhen, Master Li Junfeng. And it took about 6 months of daily concentrated practice for me to heal. And meanwhile, the circumstances of my responsibilities in the external world didn't change much. I started working less, but I was still working 70 hours a week. So it was still a lot. But what I was doing through the practice of Qigong was performing this internal alchemy. And as you mentioned earlier, connecting with this infinite part of myself, where I could expand out of my worldly physical responsibilities and circumstances and see it from a more vast and universal perspective, which made my circumstances seem so small. And so I went from this place of sort of feeling like I was being crushed by, you know, all the responsibilities responsibilities of my life and like I couldn't keep up, to having this expanded infinite view and being able to look down on it. So I became bigger than my circumstances. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, I totally got this. So yeah, again, it took about 6 months for me to feel kind of normal again and strong and replete and vital. But I made it. I made it without medication. I made it without hospitalization. I refocused on my priorities of self-care, of, you know, doing a daily practice. I quit smoking, I quit drinking. And was able to bring myself out of that place. And I know there are a lot of people in the world who suffer from that kind of, you know, relationship. Yeah.
Relationship
to their responsibilities and the people around them.
Yeah.
And through the practice of Qigong over the succeeding years, Shengzhen in particular, my closest friends will tell you, I became kinder. I became more patient. I became more joyful, more easier to laugh, more loving. All of the, any sort of like relationship issues went away. It was just, it's been so good for me. And now it's at the foundation of everything that I do, because as I mentioned before, it's based in physics. So Qigong is the practice of energy cultivation. So we are then expanding out of our physical bodies, softening the physical body to allow for this exchange of information with the universe around us. And in particular in Shengzhen, connecting with unconditional love, which is a hard thing to do. It's easy to talk about, right? There's a lot of like talk in the communities, the healing world around unconditional love and like, oh, it's just unconditional love. But how do I cultivate that if I'm not feeling it already?
Yeah. What are the steps? Just break it down. Give me 30 second steps so then I can go home and practice. But it is the a process of evolving and growing. It's evolution. It's the constant application. You know, it's not, there's no quick fix, is it? Is
right.
it? You know,
no.
Because same what you described at the beginning of the podcast, this is what people around the world, you know, children and adults, they have issues with, they suffer from, if you will. And, you know, that lack of self-love, sense of unworthiness, I'm not good enough, I'm not loved, I'm not lovable, you know,
right.
and not only I'm not lovable, I don't even know what that feels like, right? And so
right.
they use the expressions, you know, like love, self-love, unconditional love, but, you know, these are all just labels. If you've never right. experienced it, it's right. almost impossible for you to comprehend, because analytical mind can only get you so far. And, you know, I want to just dive personally deeper to like elaborate on a few different things that Jessica had described. You see, she had the process of growth. Process of growth was where she's grown so much that she was still working 70, 80 hours a week, but now she had tools in her toolkit to overcome those challenges super easy. I got this. This is easy. Yeah. This is why there is a saying, I think, from Buddhist teachings, says, if you are not busy, meditate half an hour a day. If you are busy, meditate 2 hours a day.
Exactly.
So there is a reason why that is, because when you are super busy, you allow the body to go into the fight or flight stress, you know, production of high level of stress hormones. This impacts your physical health, literally. And then you are looking for quick fix, a cigarette, and maybe a marijuana cigarette, or maybe some alcohol, or maybe you say, okay, I'm going to open like, a pint of ice cream, you know, whatever. Right. And this is your go-to, chocolate and crisps and all these like things that have zero nutritional value, but you know, they kind of, as they call it, make you feel happy, but this is just for the moment. But the reality is there's no quick fix, and all of these things, they actually help you with the symptoms, but they do not address the root cause unless you actually look, the feelings and emotions and the thoughts are not going to kill you. And from ancient Tibetan language, the symbol for meditation, the translation means to become aware, awareness. So what do you become aware of? You become aware of your thoughts, of your feelings, and your behaviors. And it's very simple. If you just say, forget all the esoteric stuff, you just say, okay, I'm going to meditate, because when I do introspection, I'm going to kind of objectively look at my subjective self. And then I'm going to say, oh, these are my dominant thoughts, which are disempowering, which are no longer serving me. These are my dominant emotions, which are disempowering and no longer serve me, or getting in the way from the life I want to create. Mm-hmm. And also, when you have these thoughts and these emotions, these actually lead you to have certain behaviors, which are also repetitive, on autopilot, and dominated. So if there is one reason you should meditate, is this sense of awareness, you then begin truly to understand yourself. Because without doing this process, you just know your profession, you know your name, you know your, you know, the origin, your culture, your family. But, you know, people say, well, I want to know myself. Well, this is the process. And of course, the teachings that Jessica has been practicing and teaching for years, go to her website. Can you tell us again your website, Jessica, if people want to know more about your amazing work?
Yeah, absolutely. It's integraltravel.com, I-N-T-E-G-R-A-L, travel.com. And there are
a lot of resources, right? A lot of courses, online courses, future retreats, meditations, a lot of things. So everyone go there. And what's your social media handle if people want to follow you, your journey?
Yeah, Facebook is at Integral Travel, and Instagram is at Integral_Travel. So those are some good resources also. But I would say that the website is the best place, and then from there you can sign up for our newsletter, which will keep you updated on all the latest offerings and the information that we have coming out to share with you.
Wonderful, wonderful. And as you guys can see and hear, that Jessica has used these tools that she learned and studied for a very long time to heal herself, to transform her life, and to feel empowered, to feel joyful, happy, and without any medication, because she tapped into innate healing resources that we are all born with, and we all actually are super women and supermen, and we have these, you know, innate capacities to overcome any challenges that physical body throws at us, or the environment. So go to Jessica's website, follow her work, and also I highly recommend go to her retreats, because it's going to be life-changing.
Thank you, Eldon. This conversation has been so rich and delightful, and we could continue to talk for probably another hour
Days. We can talk couple of days, because, you know, just for the audience, they know this, but even for you. So HeartMath's Institute, Roland McCready, the chief scientist who has been doing the research there for 3 decades, is a personal friend. And I have seen firsthand a lot of scientific evidence of, you know, the importance not only of your brain, but actually of your heart. Right. And what is the importance? I mean, I teach classes on the heart and brain coherence, and how in 1991, Andrew Amore, scientist, Dr. Andrew Amore, discovered that our heart has 40,000 neurons, which has its own independent nervous system, independent of the brain, which resides in our head. And actually, there are more signals, about 100 to 1, going from this little brain in the heart to this brain than the vice versa. And actually, that's why the saying, listen to your heart, is so important. And it's got its own long-term and short-term memory. It's got its own ability to think, not just feel. And, you know, so it's very important to, you know, there are certain techniques that I teach, which actually are used by American Special Forces and Navy SEALs, you know, and also athletes and, you know, people in business as well, they've discovered. But these are ancient techniques of breathing, which takes about 2-3 minutes, originate from Far East, usually the India, Tibet, Himalayas, Japan, China, you know, from those parts of the world. But now the modern science has proven the need for heart and brain coherence through breath, mm-hmm. and how when you slow down your breathing, you slow down your brainwave state, you slow down your heart rate. And now you actually choose to get yourself out of the fight or flight state, which is not beneficial to you whatsoever. It's got its own sort of reasons why we have that system, but we are not being chased by saber-tooth tiger. We are, not a cavemen and cavewomen. You know, we are living in, we have roof over our head and nothing is, and usually like we are perceiving some danger, you know, in the future. And just by thought alone, we are going into, unconsciously, by the way, we are going into this state of fight or flight. So by just doing this breath, doing the kind of teachings and techniques that Jessica teaches will help you. Actually, you can measure it. This is also measured in 7 days. You can improve your mental and physical health just by practicing, and then you continue for months and months and years, and it's like never ending. Like, you don't brush your teeth once a month, you brush twice, two, three times a day, you know. So it's incredible. So yeah, we are powerful beyond measure, limitless, and that's why it's called the human experience. And I truly appreciate Jessica's human experience and her journey, and I'm sure she's going to do great things going forward in her life and her business. So thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you, Alden. Thank you very much.